This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. It's now easier and cheaper than ever before to start your own blog or website. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited hosting, one-click installation of WordPress, a .com domain name, and so much more. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website at thehobbit.sqpn.com before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the series of podcasts dedicated to the upcoming two movies based on J.R.R. Tolkien's book, The Hobbit. Joining me today, as usual, is my good friend and co-host, Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Hello, Father Roderick.
Is this a good day or a bad day for Hobbit news?
It's good to be back podcasting and talking Hobbit news.
So I assume there is news, because last week we skipped an episode. I'm not sure if our listeners even were aware of that, but there was almost nothing. So this week, however, I hope it's better.
Yes. And in fairness, last week I was having just like an insane week, pulling all nighters for work.
Oh my goodness.
The combination of that and no news made it very easy to say, oh, let's just skip a week.
But
we're not usually going to let no news stop us.
That is true. But every once in a while, you need to be a hobbit and think, you know, let's forget about the world. Let's just drink a cup of tea, smoke some pipe weed, and relax.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
All right. So let's dive into our news of the week.
You're done. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, to be honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So, anything you heard?
Well, let's start with this post that I got from Middle Earth News. They posted a picture that was originally posted on Tumblr on the Tumblr Angelurial.
Could it be
it's basically
Angel
spelled Angel Uriel? I suppose it could be Angel Uriel if I'm not assuming it's one word. Mm-hmm. It's a picture, a shot of a part of Wellington, and the caption on it is, "Smoke rising over the green screen in Wellington. My guess is that Lake Town is currently being attacked by a Benedict Cumberbatch-voiced dragon."
All right. I'm looking at the picture now. It looks as if it's taken either early in the morning or late at night, because mm-hmm. it's kind of dark. You can see the sea in the backdrop, and then the premises of the studio. And there is indeed we were looking at the back of a big green screen, I assume. Mm-hmm. Lots of floodlights, spotlights, and indeed smoke. And it looks as if there is actually a second blue screen on the opposite side of the one that we're seeing in front.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be actually moving the cameras all around the characters or whatever it is. So could this be it? Do you think they're filming the dragon already?
I wouldn't be surprised. It's hard to imagine what else it might be if there's large amounts of smoke coming out.
It could be, because, yeah, it could be one of those destruction scenes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, where is there any other scene that has significantly amounts of fire? There's certainly nothing in Mirkwood with lots and lots of that, with that much fire.
Mm-hmm.
The one scene maybe it could be, you might imagine, where I could see them using green screen to great effect would be the 15 birds scene where the the orcs from the Misty Mountains have chased them up in the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo up into the trees and are setting the trees on fire.
Yeah, that could be something that they actually are doing even as second unit perhaps. We've yes. seen some glimpses of those scenes in the production video. Production video, what was it, 8?
Yeah.
There are some scenes at the beginning and at the end of that documentary where you see actually some characters, and we assumed that those were dwarves, jumping from one treetop to another. And that seems to be part, and that too was filmed in a green screen setting. Mm-hmm. They didn't elaborate on what it was. It could also be just a smoke machine to create mist or something.
However, yeah, that's true.
You'd think that they would do that in post production. So much easier for the actors to overlay the mist later on, so that they can see where they walk.
Yep, it's a good point. There actually is sort of a diversity of things it could be. Although I think we know that they're working on film 2 stuff now.
Yes.
Presumably indeed. The Smaug attack is film 2. So, and also Lake Town, Lake Town seems like the kind of thing that they really would need to use a green screen to do a lot of that kind of stuff, because I don't think they're going to build a giant wooden city on a lake and then burn it all down.
Mm-hmm. And they had built some Lake Town sets inside the studio. Mm-hmm. That's where Peter Jackson did the presentation of the production video. Mm-hmm. So there might be an exterior set or just part of the set outside as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, wow.
It's pretty exciting, though. That's a massive green screen structure.
It is enormous. It's almost as tall as the entire studio building, the biggest studio hall that they have in the background there.
Yeah. So here's a question. Let's imagine this is the Lake Town shot, and they're trying to their plan is to do Smaug attacking Lake Town. And it's not hard to imagine that, because obviously, there's a lot of stuff that maybe would need to be sort of digitally added later, particularly the dragon attacking, but maybe a lot of sort of like people in the background running from fire, maybe even some people on fire, stuff mm-hmm. that, you know, you don't actually want to set people on fire. How much of it do you think is being digitally added in, and how much stuff, both actors and sets, is actually real in that scene?
Well, I think that Peter Jackson has done both. He's not shy of doing practical effects, but in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, there were just heavy set extensions and lots of CGI, especially in the bigger battles. Sometimes a little bit too much, where only the main characters were real, and then all the rest, even the fighting orcs, they were all computer generated characters. you got to keep in mind, though, that at the time, the realism of computer generated graphics was way below what it is today. I just saw The Hunger Games a couple of days ago, and I was very impressed. And that's a low budget movie, believe it or not, compared to the blockbusters. But the CGI mm-hmm. was already at such a high standard. It was amazing. It was really hard to tell at times whether what you were looking at was computer generated or not. And there was especially a scene where Katniss, that's the main character of the movie, is running through the forest, trying to escape an artificial fire that had been created by the game masters to chase her away from the border of the arena. And that is a massive scene with lots of trees on fire. The camera is constantly moving. And so it's a scene that evokes perhaps the same dramatic circumstances as during the Smaug attack on Lake Town. And the thing was, I was convinced watching the movie that was a real fire and that those trees were really on fire and that it just created an artificial forest somewhere. And turns out that running scene was from a totally different part of the movie originally. They shot that in second unit for I don't know what kind of running scene. And it was just a regular forest. There was nothing on fire. And so everything you see there in that long sequence is completely digitally enhanced. And so there was no fire in the original scene. And it wasn't even filmed to be that escape from the forest fire sequence. So if they can do that, if they can make me believe that that's a true forest fire, then I have no doubt that we will not be able to tell in cinemas whether you know what part will be CGI generated. But I think it's also probably very tempting in terms of production practicality, let's say pragmatism, to do most of the attack in CGI. Because why would you create it in real life and jeopardizing the safety of your actors and destroying all sorts of expensive set pieces if you can do it just as well in CGI? So I think you're right. We might see some people on fire, and they will be just actors or even stuntmen with the special gear that they wear to be able to run with their back on fire, and then that might be it. And then perhaps some stuff in the foreground, and the entire Lake Town scene, the dragon, it might all be CGI. And I don't think that Benedict Cumberbatch, the actor, is able to shout over the noise of all the extras. They'll probably add that in post as well.
Yeah. Good point. Well, one thing I'm wondering is the green screen only extends so far vertically. Obviously, the screen or the sky is going to be captured in so if we're imagining that Smaug, who we know flies and indeed is flying during the attack on mm-hmm. Lake Town, is in this scene, presumably they would need to pan the camera upward to him flying and attacking. And it doesn't look like they the green screen here doesn't extend all the way up. So
yeah, but that's not necessary, actually. The green screen is just there to help the editors in post-production to separate the foreground and the actors in the foreground, the action in the foreground, mm-hmm. from whatever other elements. So you'll see this oftentimes, that the green screen is just a couple of meters high. And then whatever is above that, it will be on the footage. It will be on well, in this case, they're not using real film. It's all digital. But there will be this barrier of green background, which makes mm-hmm. it very easy to include the rest of the whatever noise there is in the picture, including lamps, including the construction that keeps the green screen erect. They will easily be able to block that out. And so they use sometimes even in when they use green screen techniques, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes either the camera doesn't make the right movements, or they lose that there are not enough trackers, and so they use a technique called rotoscoping, where they literally go frame by frame. And nowadays, that's also helped by a computer analysis of each picture. But in the Star Wars days, the early days of the original three Star Wars movies, they had to rotoscope out the background, like frame by frame. So imagine how much labor goes into that. And just considering that there are 24 frames per second, and in this movie, 48 frames per second.
Right. Yes, that sounds like that could be quite labor intensive. I remember there on one of the classic Lord of the Rings films in the pre-Peter Jackson era, the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings films from the 1970s was mm-hmm. almost entirely rotoscoped. And that was like one of the big things about it, all the rotoscoping, except in that case, it just looks horrendous.
Yes. Nowadays, it's pretty seamless. Mm-hmm. Although, of course, anything that you can do in camera saves time. Sometimes it creates extra problems, but I think most directors will still prefer, except for a guy like George Lucas, who wants to be in total control over every element in the scene. But most normal directors, let's say, they will probably do as much as they can in practical effects, and then just leave it up to the wizards of the Weta workshops to repair whatever went wrong and to enhance whatever is missing.
So another thought I have, maybe they are presumably they're not shooting this entire scene, the Lake Town attack, in like in one take, because who shoots anything mm-hmm. in one take these yeah. days? So maybe they're just shooting the parts that involve people running around burning buildings, and they're not actually doing a lot of the smog stuff. The smog stuff, I guess, is probably going to be entirely digital. There's really yes. no reason to actually shoot any real footage of that
no.
because all it is him flying around in the sky.
They won't build a dragon in the way that they built the Tyrannosaurus Rex in Jurassic Park. That's not going to happen. Although, never say never, it could very well be that if... Well, imagine the scenes where Bilbo is approaching the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you could do it digitally, but if he has to climb on the top of the tail or whatever, you know, there might actually be something practical or a head or I don't know. But it's definitely going to be cheaper to do it all in CGI. I mm-hmm. was thinking perhaps what they are shooting is not just the scenes on the ground with people running in a paddock,
mm-hmm.
but I can, just based on the type of cinematography that we saw in The Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson loves to do these flying shots.
Yes.
So I can imagine an over-the-shoulder perspective, if a dragon has shoulders, where we will see actually the dragon coming down and diving towards people that are running in all directions. And that would actually be an explanation for these green screens to have that construction. You see that construction around it? There's mm-hmm. kind of this framework.
Yeah.
It looks very,
oh, then maybe
very
there's
solid.
Cameras, like...
It could be that is actually necessary for all sorts of rigs so that the camera can actually swoop down and make all these complicated movements. And so in if you do shots like that, then you want green screen from all directions because it's you know, the camera's going to move and turn just as the dragon is going to move and turn. And so you can't do that just in front of one green screen. You want the camera to be able to be free in its movement.
Interesting.
So I don't know. There's a lot of light, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that was the thing that I thought was strange, because we know that that Smaug's attack happens in sort of dusk, and so mm-hmm. So maybe I mean,
well,
I
but
can't tell if it's evening or morning, but
no.
maybe they don't want a completely low light condition, but they want, you know, as close to low light as possible.
Well, and Peter Jackson explained in that production video where they talked about the 3D technology that they mm-hmm. actually needed a lot more light
yeah.
than with normal filming.
Right.
And so I guess that the more light, the better it is for any camera. And you can always dial it back in post-production. And actually, you might have a scene that is flooded in light. And in the computer later on, they can make it look as if it's in the middle of the night.
Right.
But if you start with low light conditions, it's much harder for the cameras, for the CCDs, the computer chips that are capturing the light, to keep sharpness and focus and everything. And we'll introduce a lot of digital grain, and you don't want that. You want to have the best lighting conditions possible, and then later on you can always modify the color, the amount of light.
Mm-hmm.
The yep. only thing that I find very daring is that they are filming outside. Remember that currently that part of the world is entering fall. And my friends in Australia told me, and also the people I know in Auckland, in New Zealand, they told me that it's pretty, you know, it's kind of drab weather. It's raining a lot. There is wind. It's really not nice to be outside right now. And so to have a big open set, unprotected, no roof, that's quite risky.
It is very daring. I guess it paid off, though. It didn't rain.
No. It looks pretty calm weather. All right. So that could be the first. It's kind of a stretch, but this could be the first thing we ever saw of something that has to do with Smaug.
That's true. Well, we'll get to that. We have a couple other Smaug-related things that we're going to discuss.
Nice.
Next is...
Oh, wait a minute. It's my... something is... I had a window open and it automatically started to play an advertisement. And it wasn't even our advertisement. Sorry about that.
No worries. So the next story is something that the One Ring unearthed regarding. I mean, they were pitching it as does this give us our first glimpse of Smaug the Golden and what he'll look like? Basically, they went back through one of the most recent production videos.
Yes.
Actually, no, wait. They went back through the production video from July 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And found an individual frame or something where in the background, sort of just kind of, you know, innocently lying draped over a chair or something, there's a sweatshirt with a logo on it. And it mm-hmm. has sort of the Hobbit logo that we've come to be accustomed to, the lettering.
Yeah.
But surrounding it, sort of lying on top of the Hobbit with his tail wrapped around the words, is a golden Smaug dragon little sort of image.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you go over to One Ring, you can see a little picture of it there. And then I found a link to – I originally found it through cinemablend.com, and they somehow have a link to a larger image, which I'm sure you can get to from the One Ring page. But
I'm looking at it now, and it's a big, pretty traditional dragon, very long tail, and the big wings. The head is curved a little bit, so he looks asleep, and he looks almost as if he's got a beak or something like that. It's a very kind of pointed type of head.
Mm-hmm.
Short little arms or legs, reminiscent of the forearms of a Tyrannosaurus. I can't see the hind legs because they're covered by the wings of the dragon. But this looks like a very traditional. This is what you expect to see. I don't want Peter Jackson to come up with some kind of weird Cloverfield type of monster that has nothing to do with the kind of traditional dragon that you expect to see, like some kind of 16-legged spider-like alien. I don't think that's necessary. It can just be a traditional dragon.
Yes. What a lot of people were pointing out was it's a very John Howe looking dragon. It's very consistent with the artwork that John Howe produces, and that and John Howe, of course, is working on he worked on the production of Lord of the Rings, and he's back for The Hobbit, doing a lot of the design and helping with the visuals and stuff. So some people are saying like, oh, this looks like the kind of dragon that he would produce, and they were linking to pictures that he's paintings that he's done before.
Yeah, I'm doing a search on Google for John Howe and then dragon, and he actually painted a lot of dragons,
mm-hmm.
and they do look similar to what we see here. Including the very pointed head. At one point, there's even some kind of a sea monster, a sea dragon that he painted, and that is reminiscent of the dragon that we see in the logo.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's an interesting notion. I don't. So my personal take is that this is just a logo.
Yeah.
That they made for sweatshirts. I think that perhaps it maybe looks a lot I don't think, for example, one of the questions if we're speculating about whether this is what the on-screen Smaug will look like is, will he be that sort of brilliant golden color?
Mm-hmm.
I mean he's the same color as the lettering, so I think this is just a logo. I wouldn't be surprised if the visual of him on screen, the design of him, sort of generally looks a lot like this, and sort of has the same kind of shape and has like these sort of blades running down his tail and has this long, slender body. So, but I don't think this is like a spoiler of, oh, he's going to look exactly like this.
No, I don't think so. But on the other hand, I would be surprised if it was very different from this.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, as you mentioned, this is a kind of a John Howe type of design. Why would they go with something outlandish? To me, this is what a dragon looks like. And in a way, I like this more, for instance, than the dragons that we saw in Harry Potter movies, where they
Yes.
try to give every dragon some kind of... Those look more like dinosaurs, at least some of them. And this looks more like the traditional fairy tale dragon. And I love those blades, and it looks very kind of mean and lean. And definitely, if this is a flying dragon, you don't want to have some overweight, big blob. You want something that is actually behaving almost like an arrow in the sky. And, yes. And what you see and in the logo looks like something that could be, it's pretty aerodynamic if it flies.
I think that's consistent too with a lot of with how Tolkien sort of described his dragons and talked about them and how he described Smaug. He was never really big on he talked a lot about referred to them as worms, and so I think he was very much in that mode of these long slender dragons as opposed to big sort of the big fat hefty ones. He certainly I don't think like, for example, the dragon in the old animated Rankin Bass Hobbit, I don't think is anything like what Tolkien imagined him to look like.
I don't even know what the dragon looked like in that one.
He kind of had this dog-like visage.
Ew.
Yeah. His face looked a lot like a dog. It was really weird.
I'm going to quickly Google that dragon now. I want to see it. Let's see. There's probably even a YouTube now that I think of it. Smaug. Here is a scene from the Rankin Bass. Oh, that looks horrible. And the sound is horrible too. Although he has the traditional golden color.
Mm-hmm. I am Smaug.
And he sings. No. Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, I hope it's not going to look like this. That is pretty abysmal. All right, I think here's another one.
Be done with your riddle.
Oh, that's better.
What else brought you, Lake Man?
Revenge.
It's kind of wolf-like as well.
Yes.
With the big teeth.
Surely you must realize that your success has made you some bitter enemies.
And his there are beams of light coming from his eyes, some kind of a searchlight and he tries to find Bilbo, but I guess Bilbo is
revenge
invisible.
You have. I am Smaug.
Yeah, we gathered that.
I kill what I wish. I am strong. Strong! My armor is like tenfold shields. My teeth are like swords. My claws. Spears.
Is this using a description from the Hobbit book?
Yes, it is.
Thunderbolt!
They're taking it very literally.
Yeah, I mean. It seems to me a bit weird that Smaug is describing himself, whereas Bilbo is able to see the dragon, so no need to say that you have sharp teeth.
Well.
Okay, that's enough. I really think that this is miles away from what Benedict Cumberbatch is going to do. I always imagine Cumberbatch's version as a very kind of super intelligent dragon that is really rused and kind of slippery and scary and perhaps even scary because he's not this imposing, I am Smaug and I'm gonna blah, blah, blah. It could be much more like perhaps even a dragon with a more human character or I don't know. I wonder if he's going to talk as fast as Sherlock Holmes or not.
Yes.
That's going to be a problem for the Dutch version with the subtitles, because with the Sherlock Holmes series, I noticed that the Dutch subtitles, they just summarize what he says. It's impossible to subtitle what he speaks so fast.
Yes.
And so it's just, well, here's approximately what he's trying to say. Just the elements you need to follow the plot.
It's funny.
All right.
Well, so that's the One Ring sort of manufactured controversy about the Smaug golden logo and design. I think you and I both concur that it's not an actual spoiler of what Smaug will look like, but
I'd love to have a t-shirt or a cap with that logo on it, though.
I think we also definitely agree about that. I would love to get a sweatshirt, a hooded sweatshirt or something with that logo on it.
Extremely cool.
I look forward to the swag getting put out there.
Merchandise, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hey, before we continue, let's take a short break and catch our breath. Our fiery breath, and we'll continue with the other news.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
We are currently approaching the end of our 2012 giving campaign. And in order to finance these podcasts, the production of the podcast, but also the hosting, the computers, we need your support. We are a nonprofit organization. We don't make much money. Actually, we don't make money. With a little bit of money that we make is, for instance, from the Amazon store. Whenever you go through our link, then we get a little bit of a commission, but it's like 2 or 3% of what you spend on Amazon. And we also get a nice commission if you start a website on Bluehost, again, through the link, through the banner on thehobbit.sqpn.com. But we also depend on the generosity of our listeners. And so we created this group of, let's say, super fans of SQPN, and that people that really want to help us on a more stable basis, growing all these podcasts and trying to reach more people, but also make these shows more entertaining and more professional. And I'm currently building I'm doing this step by step, and I'm building a new audio and video studio. So I've just, thanks to a generous gift of one of our listeners, been able to put together a new PC. And so we can stream this show, The Secrets of the Hobbit, live on the air. It's on Ustream. If you go to live.sqpn.com, that's where we broadcast. And we're going to be able to use multiple cameras and do all sorts of really fancy stuff that looks more like web TV instead of just a webcam filming whatever, you know, is going on when I'm recording this. So we want to move forward and try to keep up with all the quality that is out there in terms of web TV and web radio. But we can't do this without your help. So if you want to support what we do, and it's within your means, we would so appreciate a little bit of help, even if it's just a small one-time gift or something like that. It is what has been carrying us for the past 6 years that we've been doing this work. And if you want us to continue, if you like what we do, you can go over to sqpn.com. There on the right-hand side of the page, you will see how you can sign up as a friend of SQPN. That's the people that support us with a monthly donation. But you can also find information there on how to fill our tip jar and buy us a cup of coffee. And with that, back to the news.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
All right, we're back. What else is new?
more leaked possible logos and designs and swag. The OneRing.net just yesterday posted a teaser image of what may very well be the first Hobbit t-shirt.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, so if you go to the link that I posted, or if you go to mm-hmm. OneRing.net, it'll be one of the top posts probably. And you can see it's sort of the top if you're looking at the shirt, it's the top left corner of the shirt, so you can't really see anything. All you can see is the right shoulder of the shirt plus a fragment of what image is on the front of it.
Well, this is clearly the door that we see on the teaser poster and everything. It's the golden light outside of the Shire, and then the green door on the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's exactly sort of that very prominent promotional image that we've seen before of Bilbo standing in the door frame of Bag End.
Nice. It's the beginning of that unexpected journey, basically.
That's right.
So that makes sense
to
use that.
I don't know where they got this from. I don't know what their source was. OneRing.net says rumor has it the shirt will be available this week sometime.
Huh.
So presumably, maybe even today. Probably knowing our luck, it will go on sale as soon as we get off the air.
Yeah, we should record more podcasts so we get more news.
So we'll have to keep our eyes open.
But where would this be available on the official website of The Hobbit?
I don't know. That's why I'm a little dubious about this news that they have, because it's like where the heck is it supposed to be?
And why would they? Is it because they don't need the money? They already have the money, so I don't see why they would do that.
I'm really perplexed.
There is thehobbitblog.com, which apparently, according to the description, is the official blog. Is that correct? Thehobbitblog.com. Do you know that?
Yeah, I believe that. I think you're right. I think that's there is an official one. I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah,
it looks like a very simple blog. It's even using a theme. I know exactly where they got this theme from.
Yeah, this is the one that I believe is like attached to the Facebook page.
Oh, nice. It's got some cool photos of that's Frodo actually in the Shire. But the last entry was from March the 2nd. And it says production video 6 on location, posted by the Hobbit team on March the 2nd, 2012. So it's not really maintained often. And then on the entry of January 28th, you actually see that same picture of the door opening and Bilbo stepping outside. Mm-hmm. So that must be the one that we will see on the t-shirt. But there is no menu here that says merchandise or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go to the official website of thehobbit.com, it just shows you the trailer. And that's it. That's the only thing that you can find. So there is no place where they can sell this. Compare this to the websites that they built for around the Harry Potter movies, where it was the websites themselves were these interactive flash things. And it was just amazing. It almost looked like an animated movie itself. The Hobbit is kind of austere almost in comparison, and it seems that Peter Jackson and his production is mostly aiming at the social networks and using Facebook, and that's where they got the most interaction. I mean, the last entry has thousands and thousands of comments on Facebook. If you go to the official Hobbit blog, the latest entry only has 125 comments.
Yeah, it's a very interesting strategy that the sort of publicity machine that's around these films, at least right now, who knows what they're going to do when the films actually launch, but you are making an interesting contrast with the approach they're taking on the versus Harry Potter. They seem to have a much more sort of minimalist approach. They know they're going to get the most bang for their buck through just Facebook posts and having it be, you know, Peter Jackson's Facebook page. And maybe that's like the most straightforward and direct way to accomplish what he wants to, which is to sort of update us on the production and do this really sort of direct fan interaction. And maybe they didn't want to spend a lot of budget on this, and everybody's busy and they're running around from location to location. So they figure, you know, having a very simple blog and mostly using Facebook is like the sort of most bang for your buck, maybe.
Well, and then, of course, I think they realize that the Facebook is where people live now, at least a generation. Yes. That they're targeting. Facebook is there. That's the internet for a lot of people. And of course, everything you post there is immediately shareable, likable. And so you get a lot of buzz, even with very simple things. And here's something interesting. You just mentioned that the moment we record, there's something new. Well, I just went to Peter Jackson's Facebook page, and what do you know? 2 hours ago, there was a new entry. And it's,
hey, at least we caught it this time.
We caught it. It's actually a set of 7 photos, early publicity photos. And these are high-resolution photos that I think we've seen all of them. The first one shows Bilbo with his contract, reading through his contract with the dwarves in the background. The second one is another version of that, where he's, I'm not sure I've seen this one. He's facing the other way, and the contract actually folds in two directions, vertically and horizontally. So this is going to be nice fodder for the fans that have been trying to analyze, and they've been enhancing these photos, trying to decipher the entire text of the contract. Then there is the famous photo where Bilbo is surrounded by the dwarves, and one of them is carrying a plate of food, and the other one is using a hearing aid. Then we've got I love this photo where you see Bilbo in the kitchen of Bag End, and then on the other side of the table, Peter Jackson is actually reading through some papers and discussing the scene that they are about to film. And a nice picture of Gandalf smoking a pipe and looking very pensive. And another one where he is leaning against a tree, also smoking a pipe. And I guess that's going to be digital smoke, because there's no smoke coming from the pipe. And then there's this beautiful photo, actually the same one that we use on our Facebook page of Secrets of the Hobbit, of Bilbo in his red coat and with a walking stick in his hand, the dwarves in the background. And this is probably somewhere, I guess this is in the with the wood elves in the background.
Or Rivendell.
Or Rivendell, indeed. You're correct. This could be Rivendell. And that's it. So I have no idea why they posted this on Facebook, because we've seen these photos. There's no real news value to it. But perhaps this is just another encouragement for us to spread those photos. And it's unbelievable. This was posted 2 hours ago, and already 7,801 people have clicked the like button. I'm going to click it as well. There you go. Wow. In that 1 second, it jumped to 7,838 people. So about a couple of hundred people are clicking that thing every second. And there are 246 comments already. Tomorrow, when people are listening to this podcast, this is going to double or quadruple.
All right, I'm clicking like now. And we're over 7,900 now.
Oh, my
246
goodness.
246 comments.
Most of the comments are like, wow, 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 why can't it be December yet? And cool and awesome, I can't wait. Just general excitement. And then, I love this one. You guys are still filming that dinner scene? Does anything else happen? That's humorous. Fantastic.
It's hilarious. You're still filming that.
And it's funny to see that there, every time there are new people that are, wait, are they filming The Hobbit? So I guess that too is part of the buzz machine, because whenever you click the like button, this gets reposted in your newsfeed, and you will reach everyone who is following you. And so they know that with one update, they might be able to reach not just the people that click the like button, but also their social circles. So every post must reach 10, 20, 30 million people in just a few seconds. It is, I think, where the marketing takes place. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. Now give us that new production video. Come on, you can do it.
That's right. Or how about a clip?
Oh, a clip with some new music. Yes. That would be awesome.
I actually finally got to see the trailer in 3D in the theaters when I went and
really.
Yeah, when I went and threw away $15 at Wrath of the Titans.
You went to see that?
Yes.
I have to admire you. Oh, that's a huge sacrifice for us Hobbit fans. So tell us about it.
The trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really exciting when it came on. We were watching through the trailers and wondering what trailers we would get to see in 3D. And I got to see some of the movie, trailers are some of the movies I'm anticipating more than any others. We got to see the Prometheus trailer in 3D, which was amazing. And the Hobbit one was also awesome. It's, you know, the same trailer that we've seen before, but just getting to finally see it on the big screen was just, blew me away.
And every scene is in 3D already?
Trying to think. I think there might have been. I don't think all of it was. In fact, now I'm trying to wonder if I've confused myself and it wasn't in 3D because they were mixing some in 3D and some in not. Was it in 3D? Okay, I'm gonna have to check with my friend that was sitting next to me and ask him, did we see this in 3D or not? And then I'll tell you on next week's episode.
I'm gonna Google this.
Google it and see. Maybe I've lost my mind.
Hobbit trailer in 3D. Well, if you don't remember whether it was in 3D or not, it was a little bit underwhelming then.
It didn't really make a huge impression on me.
No, it must have been in 3D.
Yeah, because other people are mentioning it. So yes. Yeah, I think it was. But it's, you know, there's two things about 3D. One, people have gotten really good at not making it do the whole thing where it comes out at the screen at you and that kind of stuff. And the other thing, too, is that the theater – I really think some theaters make it work better than others.
Absolutely, and yes.
If you're – in particular, like seeing it on IMAX. And if you're seeing it in a sort of a normal a theater in 3D, and if you're sitting back far enough to where the edges of the screen are actually, you know, fairly visible in your main line of vision and not at the edge of your field of vision, that really sort of detracts from the experience. When you're noticing the, you know, sort of the depth.
Yes.
And then you see that none of it extends beyond
something the is
edges
cut off.
Of the screen. Yeah.
You know, I saw a very interesting interview about that with John Knowles. I think his name is John Knowles, who supervised the 3D remake of Star Wars: The Phantom Menace, and it was done on FX Guide, I think. I'll include a link in the show notes to the video. Very cool interview because he talks in, and this is a very technical interview, but he explains how 3D works and why sometimes 3D is broken. And I've learned so much. And one of the cool things that he was explaining was that there is this technique where they will actually change the size of the borders, the black borders on the left and on the right of the screen, to avoid this this object being cut off, because that takes you out of the 3D experience. And apparently for The Phantom Menace, that's what they used. And so if you sit in the theater, you will not notice that because your brain thinks, just doesn't see that these black borders are becoming bigger and smaller. But it's just to make sure that every object in the scene is always fully there, and that you don't get like a hand and it's just cut off, and so that they will mask some of the images, some part of the image, to just enhance that 3D effect. Of course, with The Hobbit, they are not going to have that problem, because while they are filming, they can already keep that in mind, that they don't cut off objects that need to stick out of the screen or something like that. He also explained that they are with Avatar, he worked on Avatar before he did the Phantom Menace transfer to 3D. And he said that with Avatar, they learned that they should not, you know, go beyond a certain percentage in front of the screen. If you go more than, let's say, 20%, out of the screen, people will get headaches and will start to get cross-eyed and everything. And so most of the 3D is happening actually behind the let's say the dimension of the screen. So it's you're going to look into the world, into the picture. And so it's almost as if you're looking through a window, which is much less jarring than, I saw Beowulf in 3D, which was just, it was 3D as a gimmick. And so every 5 seconds there would be a something jumping towards you, and it just gave me a headache. I don't think that with The Hobbit we're going to get that kind of 3D.
No, that doesn't seem like Peter Jackson's style.
Here is a post online that I found of someone who saw the Hobbit trailer in 3D. I just saw the Hobbit trailer in 3D, and it felt like a religious experience. I'll admit I had a tiny bit of doubt about the Hobbit living up to the high standards Jackson created with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but seeing the trailer in 3D today in the theater with that haunting dwarf song and Howard Shore's masterful score, well, I am actually starting to think the Hobbit could end up being even better than the trilogy.
Just imagine lots of saliva.
A religious experience. Now I'm so sad that I didn't see it in 3D.
Yes, that's right.
Awesome.
I don't think I, obviously, since I was couldn't even remember whether I'd actually seen it in 3D, obviously I didn't find it to be a religious experience. But,
you know,
it was
you're just working too hard. You're doing all these all-nighters and you just don't have enough energy to get excited.
Apparently. But it was exciting. The crowd was very excited. And it was beautiful to see. Have I seen it in the theater? I don't know if I got to see it in the theater. Oh, I did see it once back when I saw Tintin. But
the same
this
trailer.
Is the second time that I got to see it. And there's something about seeing it in the theater versus watching it on a 13-inch MacBook Pro screen.
Oh, yeah. And as you say, it really matters what kind of theater you're going at. I noticed a huge difference in quality between the 3D in my local theater here in Amersfoort and then the 3D of the Phantom Menace in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, it was just crystal clear. And I didn't notice that I had glasses on. Whereas I saw another movie in 3D. Which one was it? It was just recently something. Gosh, again, it was kind of forgettable. It was not the Harry Potter movie. It was something else. Well, that's how much of an impression it made on me. And I was just irritated by the lackluster quality. And it was just kind of the colors were faded. The screen was dark. There was some of that kind of cross vision going on where you see both images. So the image for your left eye kind of bleeds through in your right eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a painful experience, and so I think it's due to as far as I know, there are two projection techniques when it comes to 3D, one of which is probably the more expensive one that they use in this brand new theater in Amsterdam, and the other one is kind of using old-fashioned cameras or older cameras, and it just kind of splits it in a I don't know, it's a cheaper method and it doesn't work as well. So I'm definitely going to make sure that I see The Hobbit in the best theater that I can find, either in Holland or in New Zealand.
Yeah, me too. I'm going for the full blown IMAX 3D thing. I'm going to go hog wild.
Yeah, me too. Oh wow. Well, if the trailer gets people this excited, imagine what it's going to do if they are going
to
see this 3D.
When they actually get to watch the film.
this was even not shown in 48 frames per second because we don't have theaters that show movies in 48 frames per second. So I think the combination of 3D and then 48 FPS plus the excitement of the premiere plus the music, mm-hmm. people are going to die in the theater. Or they don't want to leave anymore. I can imagine that the lights come up and the credits roll, and then people are just going to be like, I want to stay here. I don't want to go back to my normal life. in the United States, isn't it that you can just buy one ticket and then no one will actually chase you from the theater because you can actually walk into any theater, any projection hall that you want?
That is true. That the theaters are at most movie theaters, the screens, there's more than one screen behind where you exchange your ticket.
Yeah.
Now, so
in theory, you could watch the movie and go to the toilet for the last five minutes, and then wait there and having all sorts of bowel problems, and then get back and hop into the second screening.
Yes, you could in theory do that. Now, with especially early on, the first few weeks of a large movie like The Hobbit, they have people standing outside the doors at the beginning and at the end to ensure that people aren't doing stuff like that. So you could get away with it. You probably have to wait until after it's been out for a month.
Mm-hmm. And who would do that? Come on. Like, these are long movies.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, by the way, I remember now the movie that I saw in 3D, the latest one, was not The Hunger Games, which was refreshingly 2D. And I was like, yeah, that is what a movie is supposed to be like. And it was John Carter, the Disney disaster.
How was that? I bet that was great.
No, it was not. It was pretty lame. It was really, there were lots of things wrong with that movie.
See, you were congratulating me on going to see Wrath of the Titans, but John Carter, that's pretty good too.
Yeah, but yeah, and no,
very brave.
It was terrible. I did a review on my a weekly show, The Break. So if people want to listen to my 15-minute analysis of why this was a failure. They can just look it up. Go to thebreak.sqpn.com. It's in one of the last few episodes. Hey, let's get back to the world of The Hobbit.
Yes. So another piece of big news is a leak. And of course, this is our favorite kind of news to discuss, where it's completely unverified rumor.
Absolutely.
There's this guy, Super Rogatory. He's a somewhat well-known Twitter account on the internet that posts a lot of innuendo and rumors and about various things. But this person did a post that said, as to what Monolith WB Game Seattle is up to now, pretty sure it is a little fantasy action RPG light called The Hobbit Part 1. I saw this post on joystick.com, and it's been other places like Middle Earth Network News and other things like that. So this has been sort of spreading around the internet. People are all excited about the possibility that Monolith is working on the
game,
yeah, and tie-in game.
And it's kind of a tradition to release the games before the movie. So we might see a game because they want to get the sales, the Christmas sales. So you want to have this in store probably for Thanksgiving. We might actually see a little bit more of the movie before the movie comes out. And then there was finally, because we have to wrap it up for today, there was an April Fool's joke that fooled a lot of people that Aladdin and Elrohir were going to be played by the same actors that did the Weasley twins in the Harry Potter series. Did you see that? And I got really upset posts and even emails from our listeners. It was like, you gotta be kidding me. And I reacted like, I think actually people are kidding. It's April Fools. And it turned out it was a joke.
I fell for it too.
Really?
I saw it at first and I was like, really? That just doesn't sound like a good idea. And then I was like, April 1st. Oops.
Absolutely. No, I was on guard that day and I didn't fall for it. But I wish I had, because it's kind of something that's pretty cool to get upset about. All right. Well, there's some more on our list of notes for, but we'll keep that for next week. You know, there might be a kind of a low news week. So next week we'll have plenty of other stuff to talk about. In the meantime, let me wish you all a happy Easter, because that's coming up soon. And of course, after Easter, well, Middle Earth will be there just like it is now. So enjoy your Easter weekend. Thank you for listening to this episode. And where can people find our blog? Our blog is thehobbit.sqpn.com, but we have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Do we update it?
Yes, we do. In fact, we just posted, we shared those photos on Peter Jackson's page during this episode.
Oh, nice.
Just to prove that we caught the breaking news during the show.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for your contribution to today's show. And as I said, we will see you soon in another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. This is a listener-supported production. And so if you want to help us make more of these shows and help us build a new studio and do even more, go over to sqpn.com and see how you can support us with a one-time donation or even a recurring one. Nowadays with PayPal, it's really simple to set up, and really everything is every little bit helps. And of course, if there are millionaires listening, talking to you, Peter Jackson, we wouldn't mind a little bit of support from your end of the world. God bless.
SQPN.
leading the way in Catholic new media.